Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to racism, human suffering, mental conditions, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
This book keeps on telling me to get my children Switches, but I just can't afford that many Nintendo systems. I'm Andy.
Come see Pavlov's amazing children. Just mind the splash zone. I'm Adam.
As the old saying goes, when you have electric paddles, every child looks like a psychopath. I'm Sean.
I'm sorry, I can't record today. I have to stare at pictures of beautiful mountains. I'm Kelly, and this is Acid Pop. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Acid Pop. Today, we're going to be talking about childcare. Just as a little forewarning, more so than usual, while this isn't an episode about child abuse, some of the ideas of what was good childcare are not what we might support today.
Just go cut your own switch, Kelly.
I think the Spartans knew what they were doing.
Wolves are excellent parents.
Etymology of child comes from Old English killed, meaning...
They what?
Gets bad right from the beginning.
She didn't say kilt?
Killed or kiled, meaning fetus, infant, unborn, or newly born person.
Huh. Wow. So we don't really use child until after like an infant or even toddler, but the actual word is just a super baby.
All phases. And that goes back to the Proto-Germanic kilfam, which meant more like with child.
Okay.
Kilfam is a millennial supervillain.
And then care, in the sense of taking care of, actually only goes back to the 1580s.
Of course
before it does. That, it was...
No one loved anyone before then.
Well, they had like care for as in like, but not care for as in take care of.
Oh, I'll take care of them.
The older version of the word care goes back to the Old English caru, which meant sorrow, anxiety, or grief.
Huh. Okay.
How does that fit into caribou?
My child grief.
That sounds like a parent.
Also, burdens of the mind and serious mental attention.
Mm-hmm. Still sounds like
really covering all their bases.
And that eventually goes back to the Proto-Indo-European root gar, which meant to cry out, call, or scream.
Gar.
You gotta have to say it like a scream.
I can't scream gar, I don't think. Let me try. Gar!
That was pretty good.
Turned elderly.
Yeah, aged 50 years.
There aren't any phobias of parenting or child care or child rearing, although I sort of think there should be.
I was going to say, tell that to my wife.
So we're going to go straight into our quiz with our true and false. So.
So good at these.
Vikings gave their children ugly names to protect them from evil spirits. True or false?
It's such a good...
I want it to be true.
I know. It's such a good story. I'm going to say true and cross my fingers.
No, they gave them beautiful names to attract beautiful spirits. So I'm going to say false.
I'm afraid this one is false.
Aww.
Or at least I could find nothing on the internet that supported it. And I looked.
But How to Train Your Dragon told me so.
Yeah, that's true.
So Viking children were generally named after heroes or recently dead family members. If a close relative died while a woman was pregnant, then that was officially that child's name. If a bunch of them died, I think they had to hold a vote.
This is Newbjorn.
Do you think any grandparent was ever like, it's going to be named after me, watch!
Oh, no, you don't!
Well, that's how you get those really long Swedish names, is two grandparents died at the same time.
Yeah.
Except they were Vikings, so they had to run into battle to die. They couldn't just die in bed.
Wheel my bed out to the battlefield!
The closest I could find to truth about this was in China, there is a tradition of what they call milk names, where babies were traditionally not named until 100 days after birth.
Uh-huh.
And until then, they had a milk name. And these days, milk names are generally cute diminutives like you know, pumpkin, something like that. But it, there was a time when an unappealing name was picked to protect the child.
I love you 2%.
Oh, and you too, fat free.
Heavy whipping cream will always be my favorite.
Oh, man.
All right. True or false? To encourage piety in their children, pregnant Puritan women were expected to attend church twice daily while pregnant and look only at godly things.
You know, I believe it, but I also, somehow it's in my mind that they weren't allowed in church when they were pregnant.
Well, I feel like that fits in with a lot of other crazy stuff I've heard about where they like, if you eat too much of the wrong thing during pregnancy, then your kid's going to come out orange or something.
Well, but I Puritans are the kind of people where a pregnant woman in church reminds somebody of sex and therefore is impure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of half and half on this one.
So I'm going to go false.
I'm going to say true. Yeah, because I feel like there was also that thing where, like, after the woman gave birth, like, the husband couldn't see the wife for, like, a month after, and they basically had to be locked in a room. So I feel like they want to get their churching in while they can still be in public.
That one was false. Pregnant women in the 1920s... we're supposed to avoid thinking about ugly or deformed people.
Well, that's a losing battle if I ever saw one.
Don't think about the elephant man. Don't think about the elephant man.
Stay away from the carnival, honey.
And as much as possible, they were supposed to admire scenes of beauty to make their children beautiful. Magazines actually printed pictures specifically for pregnant women to gaze upon to encourage their children to become beautiful.
I came out looking like a vista.
Oh man, my kid looks like Manet or Monet.
The doc
has a weird starry night rash.
True or false, the first child labor law in the U.S. was found to be unconstitutional.
That sounds like
I think this is true.
There's been two falses in a row, so I'm sticking with true. Sooner or later, I'm going to come up winning.
Andy's been right the whole time, so I'm going to go with Andy.
This is one of those things where it'd be one of those, like, you can't take away a kid's right to work.
All right, you guys are right on the money. That one is true.
Woo.
So I'm not going to get into it.
I mean, boo.
The law specifically regulated interstate commerce of goods made by children under the age of 14, and it was found to be in conflict with commerce law.
Man, we can't break commerce law.
The first anti-child labor law to stick was made in 1938. That said, and this is true till today, agriculture was exempted.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Children still pick about a quarter of U.S. food.
Wow.
It's because they're able to climb up on those really small branches and pick the fruit way high up.
Mm-hmm. And government statistics shows that children who work in the agriculture field...
I get it.
Barely half finish high school, and agriculture is the second most dangerous occupation in the United States. However, really? Current U.S. child labor laws allow children to work as farm workers at younger ages and for longer hours than at anything else.
Hey, little Ricky, you got small hands. Can you reach the spark plug that fell into this tractor?
Children as young as 12 can work for unlimited hours before and after school.
Jeez.
Because that kind of work builds a lot of character, so it's important for them to have that.
In Vietnam, parents train their infants to use the bathroom on cue by whistling.
There's no way.
I wish.
False.
It's absolutely true. I wonder, we need to talk to Trung.
I feel like if that was a thing anywhere, people would know about it, right?
I feel like you could walk through a nursery and just start whistling and be a, some sort of horrible terrorist.
No! It's like the dancing waters in Las Vegas.
It's absolutely true.
I cannot imagine this is true, so I'm going to have to go false.
This is absolutely true.
No!
Yes. Get out of here.
I guess we're going to have to try that.
Starting at birth, mothers pay special attention to when their child is going to the bathroom. And anytime they are, they whistle.
They just act real casual around it.
The babies learn to associate the sound with the action, and by 9 months, a whistle is all it takes. Just take the baby
a whistle
to the toilet,
for your whistle.
Whistle and done.
That's got to make their Give first school dance whistle. Really awkward.
Well, it opens up the doors to, like, what else could you train them to do that kind of stuff at? Like, you could really have some fun with those kind of commands.
Now kill.
The U.S. Children's Protection Bureau asked parents to send in samples of their children's feces for health inspections.
Yeah. I'm gonna say true. That we're all about the biome these days. They're trying to piece it together.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to make a stool sample last in the mail. Especially this time of year, it's gonna sit in that mailbox.
I don't know. This sounds real, I guess. I don't know. I've been wrong on almost all of them.
I've been right on all of them. So I'm gonna
follow Andy.
This is false.
Don't.
However, that did not stop people from sending them samples of their child's feces. It was just never requested.
Put one of them nice envelopes.
It was established in 1912 to investigate child mortality and prevent deaths, and it was the first U.S. agency headed by a woman 10 years before women had the right to vote.
Well,
huzzah!
Quick, son, poop in this envelope.
Do I have to?
So for fill in the blank, I'm going to share a piece of
candy.
Child care advice, and you're going to tell me when it's from. If it's before 1900, you can just give me a century, but if it's actually after 1900, I want a decade.
Okay.
Number one, do not feed infants for the first 2 to 3 days after birth.
Oh, Lord. This sounds like some 15th century shit.
Sounds like some... the golden age of immigration advice or like depression era stuff.
Yeah.
They'd used to make like the buck last a little bit longer.
I'm sticking with the 15th century. You guys can't trick me. Immigration. What's that even? You made it up.
I'm going to say 1940s.
I'm going to say 19 teens, tens. What do you call it?
1910s.
I think I can figure out either of those answers. This is from the 1700s.
Oh,
from an essay so on close. Nursing and the management of children.
By a man.
Yes. This essay also...
Well, that's why they call it management.
This book also included advice such as start solids at 3 months and do not feed the child more than 3 times a day.
Solids?
And a warning that failing to breastfeed would kill the mother.
You'll explode with milk.
Breast done exploded. My baby just won't eat this baguette.
It's just like figure like they that stale salted beef they had at the time.
So I understand. I love peanuts.
Number two, never hug or kiss your children.
50s.
Yeah, I was just about to say it's like that's got to be like the 1930s,
40s again. I'm sticking with my first answer.
This is from the 1920s.
Oh, ah, so close.
It was John Watson. And to give you a direct quote, never hug and kiss them. Never let them sit in your lap. If you must, kiss them once on the forehead when they say goodnight. Shake hands with them in the morning.
Awesome.
Got a very business relationship with my toddler.
Give them a pat on the head if they have made an extraordinarily good job of a difficult task.
A firm nod.
He believed that children were 100% products of their environment and trainable like lab rats.
Or Labradors.
I mean, that's what the Taiwanese have just taught me, right?
Yeah.
And so he figured if you wanted a child to grow into a properly behaving adult, you should treat them like an adult.
Starting now.
I love it. Put them in little like business suits and ties.
Demand that they pay rent.
All their poops must be on time.
You're behind in production today, kid.
To check an infant's health, submerge it in a bath of wine.
That's got to be.
This sounds like Greece.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is before 1900s. I hope.
1899 for sure. I'm going to say 1100 BCE.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll go a little more. Let's say 900 BCE.
1500s.
So I'm going to give it to anyone who said Greece, even if they didn't get the time right.
Yay!
So this is from 650 BCE to 300 BCE in Sparta. It was believed that a weak child would convulse and die.
Or start making an ass of themselves and call their ex-girlfriend.
Yes, in the wine.
Put it with the rest of the drunk babies in the drunk tank.
I gotta put this on my Sparta book.
So they got their...
It's like Facebook for Spartans.
So they got their babies stupid drunk and then threw them at wolves?
What's wrong with this baby? I don't know. Put it in the jug.
They were just flavoring it for the wolves that were going to come and eat it. You want to marinate the baby.
It's true.
Hot water burn baby.
So Spartan children who weren't exposed as infants were removed from their families at the age of 7 and sent to either military training if they were boys or a school environment if they were girls. Both sexes were trained in athletics, but also arts and rhetoric. Starting at the age of 12, Spartan boys were denied shoes and fed just enough to get them through the day. They were expected to supplement with either hunting or stealing food, but if they were caught doing either, they were severely beaten.
Huh. Very lean children.
Yeah.
These wolves aren't going to have any good either.
Interestingly, no one in Sparta ate well because they were supposed to eat at these communal tables and they were always given just enough food because they wanted to keep them fighting fit.
Mm, yes.
Presidential fitness program.
Yep. You know, the president of Sparta.
Provoke children into disobeying, then beat them for disobedience.
That sounds like the 20s or 30s again.
That sounds Freudian to me. I'm going to say 1800s.
1910. Why not?
I was going to say 1900s.
Like the knots?
You have to name a decade. Of
like the before the 10.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be nice? This is from the 1990s.
What?
Dr. Phil, no.
It's specifically from a book called To Train Up a Child, which we're going to talk to about in detail a bit later.
Don't wait around for them to make mistakes. Provoke them.
To train up a child to be a boxer.
It's popular in certain Christian homeschooling circles, and sure it's got a lot to say about when and how to beat your children. Early and often kind of summarizes it.
Is the sun up? Go for it.
Yeah, there's a whole beating itinerary.
Son, beat yourself. My wrist hurts from yesterday.
All right, last one. Feed infants on a strict schedule and never feed them at night.
Turn into gremlins.
I'm racing this mogwai to be my own.
To shave them a lot.
This is from the 70s.
1600s.
20s.
Adam is the closest without going over. This is from 1962.
Jeez.
But this was...
Damn, hippies.
This was not to keep them from turning into gremlins, but to keep them from turning into socialists.
Huh. Only socialists eats while the sun's down.
Is that why I believe in medicine for all? Because I ate very late for a very long time? Because
I believe in nighttime snacking?
Honey, do you hear the child rustling around in the pantry? No!
The quote is, if we teach our offspring to expect everything to be provided on demand, we must admit the possibility that we are sowing the seeds of socialism.
Hmm. You know what else socialists like? Drinking water. So maybe...
Just submerge the child
crazy
in wine.
About this stuff.
So for our last segment, I'm going to be sharing a few things that have been done to children. And you tell me what they were trying to accomplish. Electroshock therapy.
ADHD.
Outbursts. Getting rid of outbursts.
Yeah, I was going to say leveling out children so they don't have highs and lows so much.
Yeah, their imagination was too active.
I'm going to sort of give it to all of you. This was used to treat childhood schizophrenia, which today most cases would probably be called autism.
Ah.
Wow.
This was a Dr. Loretta Bender in the 1950s who worked with children as young as 3.
How do you tell if a 3-year-old's schizophrenic?
Apparently, she thought just about every child she met was schizophrenic.
when you have a hammer.
Pretty much. Any child she examined, like 90% of them, she felt needed shock treatment.
Look at all these insane children.
These drawings make absolutely no sense.
A fire truck is red.
So she was convinced that her techniques worked, though they hadn't been tested in a controlled environment.
I feel perfectly normal now.
Although even she was a little less than enthusiastic. She said they were somewhat better for her intervention and that the therapy stimulated appetite and well-being.
Well, hell, give me some of that.
Yeah, I could go for some.
Side effects included days-long comas and, according to other doctors who observed her patients, increased psychosis.
Wait a minute.
Things get worse before they get better. Just trust me.
Constant negative reinforcement while speaking.
They were born female.
So negging the child.
An abundance of self-esteem.
I feel like this is probably to try and cure socialism again.
I didn't say that these were cures. I said that they were trying to do something to the child.
They're trying to make him a capitalist.
This was to prove that stuttering was psychological, not physiological. They were trying to induce a stutter.
Huh.
They called it the monster study.
Yeah, sounds like it.
It was performed on 22 orphan children in Davenport, Iowa.
Just the saddest little kids they could find.
I'm outraged because they did that to 22 children and because that's not a nearly a large enough control group.
Half of the children received positive speech therapy. They were told that they were doing a good job. They were speaking well. If they had stutters, that they were improving. And the other half were given negative speech therapy, belittling the child anytime it spoke and telling them if they didn't have a stutter, that they were clearly developing one and that they should not speak unless they could were sure they could get the words out.
When was this?
1939.
Is that why we had so many serial killers in the 1960s?
Who organized this study?
I don't have that.
Bunch of nuns that ran the orphanage.
I'd like to think it was like, I don't know, government and not like regular scientists.
So many of the normal speaking orphan children who received the negative therapy in the experiment suffered speech impediments for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
No.
And the effect was almost instantaneous. After her second session with 5-year-old Norma, the speech therapist wrote, "It was very difficult to get her to speak, and although she spoke freely before, and she covered her mouth and looked away any time she was asked a question."
Started calling her Abnorma. Yeah.
Come on, Abby.
That's not my name.
This is our last one. Rebirthing therapy.
What is that?
That's what you're going to learn.
Oh, okay.
Rebirthing therapy. This is to give the child an Oedipus complex.
This was, if they didn't like the way the child, like, looked or acted or thought or something, this was, like, trying to, like, re-roll the child and see if it came out different next time.
So you know how sometimes people grow up and they like to dress up like babies and be treated like babies? You do this hoping that
I'm an adulting baby.
they'll grow out of it the second time.
This is used or was used to treat reactive attachment disorder, and this is today-ish. They recently outlawed it in a couple states.
What is it?
Oh, okay, I'm going to get into it.
Mash that child up against the vagina.
First, reactive attachment disorder is when a child is thought not to be able to develop attachments to parental figures and others, usually because of abuse or isolation when they are young. You see it mostly in children who were institutionalized or adopted. So that's a real thing. And rebirthing therapy is meant to simulate the birthing process and allow the child to bond like an infant with their parent.
Yeah, because the birthing process isn't horrible for anyone.
Well, so it's a form of regression therapy.
Okay.
And this is going to bring us into our first story.
All right.
Which is why rebirthing therapy is illegal in at least one state.
I still don't know what it is.
They're trying to re-trigger like imprinting.
We're going to describe how it went for this girl.
Okay.
So this was Candace Newmaker, age 10. She was wrapped in a flannel sheet and covered with pillows to simulate a womb or birth canal and was told to fight her way out of it.
That sounds kind of fun.
People often describe a womb as a bunch of pillows and a flannel sheet.
Well, the only thing they're missing is if we need to dump a bunch of geck on her.
Four adults weighing a combined total of 673 pounds used their hands and feet to push on Candace's head, chest, and 70-pound body to resist her attempts to free herself.
Jeez.
Well, she,
hey now.
Sounds horrific.
This is Red Rover on expert mode.
While she screamed for help and said she was dying.
Say, babies can't talk!
You come out of that pillow, woman, then we'll talk.
To which the therapists responded, "You want to die? Okay, then die. Go ahead. Die right now."
Yeah, that'll help her. She's going
to
feel so...
Are we still doing the whole nagging thing to kids? Is that... Oh, okay.
Means I can't die. No, you can die. Do you want to die?
Bigger stuttering baby I ever saw.
Coming out of there, you stuttering baby.
Never seen a baby so unable to get loose from four adults.
By 20 minutes into the session, she had vomited and excreted inside of the sheet, and they kept her restrained. By 40 minutes...
Jesus.
Wow.
Her adopted mother, who had brought her for this therapy, called, "Baby, do you want to come out?" And she was heard faintly to respond, "No." This was her last word.
Oh, no.
To this, the therapist replied, "Quitter, quitter, quitter, quit, quit, quit."
Wow.
She's a quitter. At 70 minutes.
Not a therapist I want to visit.
When they unwrapped the baby, Candace, they found she was motionless, blue on the fingertips, and not breathing.
Yeah.
She did not survive.
Man.
Damn.
I feel like if somebody came to me with this and they were like, "This is scientifically proven, this works, you just have to muscle your way through it." And then they told me to like crush a child, after like 30 seconds of that, I'd be like, "Okay, I'm done. That's all I got." Let alone
starting to feel not like science to me, guys.
Sean's like, "That's all I got." She's like, "Quitter, quitter." I'm like,
"Yeah, that's what I said." Responded.
This whole thing was filmed. They were all found guilty of some level of child endangerment or manslaughter.
Good. And this was when?
Yeah, no kidding.
I think this was in the late 1990s, early 2000s. I don't have the year down. But yeah, this was fairly recent.
I hope that therapist was put away for a long, long time.
I hope that therapist was wrapped in blankets.
She's in a flannel and pillow encrusted jail cell and told to escape every day and called names.
So now we're going to go back in time a bit.
Good. I feel slightly better when horrible things happen further away from me.
This story is sort of a example of what happens when the government has a very firm view on how a child should be raised and decides to get involved. The horrible history in the U.S. of Indian schools.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to refer to these as Indian schools because it's what they're called historically.
Sure.
It's
faster to say than Native American brainwashing encampments.
So this isn't like Indian Giving was on the playground where they send you to school to take all your knowledge?
No. Those don't get a lot of funding.
This started in the 1870s when they started shipping or otherwise acquiring indigenous children and putting them in boarding schools off of reservations.
Why?
The founder of these schools was Richard Pratt, and he based the education on what he had developed in an Indian prison.
Prisoners and children are practically the same thing.
He described his philosophy thus in a speech he gave in 1892. "A great general has said that the only good Indian is a dead one. In a sense,
good opener. Good
strong opening.
In a sense, I agree with the sentiment."
We'll teach these children to be dead.
It doesn't take much, really.
One lesson each.
"But only in this, that all the Indian there is in the race should be dead. Kill the Indian in him and save the man." So these were brainwashing academies. There's no way around it.
Uh-huh.
Students at these schools were forbidden to express their culture, anything from wearing long hair to speaking even a single word in their native languages. They were bathed in kerosene and had their heads shaved.
Why? What purpose does bathing in kerosene
have to do with anything?
I think they thought it was some sort of depesting procedure. And there was a very conscious and deliberate attempt to get children from the native nations that were considered most hostile and least likely to integrate on their own. In some ways, they were trying to get child hostages. They were trying to get the children of the leaders of these tribes and keep their children in essentially child prisons.
Well, yeah, it was like leverage over the leaders. And exactly. It was also like taking away the next generation.
Exactly. You destroy their language and their culture by not letting the next generation learn it.
Well, yeah, you bathe the kids in kerosene, and then if you hear the language, you can just, like, kid says one sentence in a Native American language, all of a sudden you hear a matchbook go.
The government operated as many as 100 of these schools. Children were sometimes taken by force, by armed police.
Sometimes.
Sometimes they were given up willingly because their parents didn't think they had any other options, and they couldn't go to public schools because of racism.
Yeah, I was honestly amazed there was any tribes with any fighting them left at that point.
Yeah.
So in a 1928 report on these schools, it said the following. In nearly every boarding school, one will find children of 10, 11, and 12 spending 4 hours a day in more or less heavy industrial work. Dairy, kitchen work, laundry, and shop.
That's a weird school.
This is America.
And just so we're clear here, because I want to make sure I heard that right. This guy gave his speech starting up these schools in 1892, and this was reported in 1928. Mm-hmm. So this has been going on for 36 years.
These continued through the 60s.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Ah!
And the report goes on, labor of children that is carried out at Indian boarding schools would, it is believed, constitute a violation of child labor laws in most states.
If we had any.
Discipline within these schools was severe, and generally it included confinement, starvation, corporal punishment, and deprivation of any privileges, like the ability to go outside.
It was always kerosene scented.
The students were ravaged by disease, which isn't surprising. In December of 1899, measles broke out at the Phoenix Indian School, and in its wake, there were 325 cases of measles, 60 cases of pneumonia, and 9 deaths within a 10-day period.
Wow.
Ah.
So, yeah, America.
That sounds great.
And you know what's crazy about that is, like, that went so poorly. It's hard to imagine that going any worse. And Australia tried the same goddamn thing, like, a few decades later.
They did a lot of that with the Aborigines.
Crikey.
Now, I told you we were going to get back to that book to train up a child.
Oh, yeah. I'd almost forgotten.
Oh, yes. Let me put on the Rocky II soundtrack.
To Train Up a Child is a self-published book from Michael and Debbie Pearl, who are the ministers behind what they call No Greater Joys Ministries. And as I said, this book is popular within a certain sect of evangelical Christian homeschoolers. It's not widespread. It's not like flying off the shelves. It's self-published, but it has been linked to the death of 3 children, all adopted. They include 4-year-old Sean Paddock, who was killed by his adoptive mother in 2006.
Ooh.
He was suffocated when he was wrapped too tightly in blankets.
Again?
What is this swaddling shit?
Yeah, you're not supposed to swaddle 4-year-olds.
Or airways.
Yeah. You're not going to bed until you eat your blanket.
Get this blanket right nice and tight around your neck there. You're going to be so warm.
She told the court that she wanted to keep him from getting out of bed.
He's 4.
And he never moved again. Mission accomplished.
7-year-old Lydia Sanchez was killed by her adoptive parents in 2010. She died after being spanked for several hours.
Hours?
The punishment was for mispronouncing the word pulled from a children's book. She said pulled. They beat her to death.
Wow. It's horrible, but like, think of the stamina on the parents' part.
Yeah, this'll learn you to read, kid.
I'm going to beat you till I can't write anymore.
I can't imagine hitting someone's butt so many times that they die.
He's punching my butt. Please stop punching my butt.
She'd probably stop after their eyes fall out.
Let's talk a little bit. This book was found in all 3 of these homes. Adoptive parents' houses.
How do we know the book wasn't placed there after the accident?
So we're going to talk a little bit about what the book says.
It's like The Catcher in the Rye for shitty parents.
The book encourages parents to think of the switch as a magic wand and says,
watch it work its magic.
Wingardium Leviosa.
Teaching a child to obey is like training an animal. A dog can be trained not to touch a tasty morsel laid in front of him. Can't a child be trained not to touch? Here's a couple quotes. Use whatever force is necessary to bring him to bay. If you have to sit on him to spank him, then do not hesitate and hold him there until he is surrendered and defeat him totally.
Wow.
Oh, wait, that was Sun Tzu's Art of War.
I was going to make the same reference.
Bring him to bay.
For the under 1-year-old, a little 10 to 12 inch long willow branch, about 1/8 inch in diameter, is sufficient.
But you'll need a good run up.
Well, you know, that makes sense, because willow has natural painkillers in it. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes alternatives have to be sought. A 1 foot ruler, or its equivalent in a paddle, is a sufficient alternative. For the larger child, a belt or larger tree branch is effective.
If nothing is handy, just drop them from a sufficient height.
The parent who puts off training until a child is old enough to discuss issues or receive explanations finds their child a terror long before he understands the meaning of the world. A newborn soon needs training.
No! Do they ever use quotation marks around training, or?
They don't find it necessary.
When they use words like bring them to bay, I imagine training has like a chair and a whip involved a lot of the time.
Well, they advise, for example, to put your young child, your crawling 6-month-old, on a blanket and to switch them anytime they try to crawl off to teach them to stay where you put them.
These people are dead now, right?
They deny any culpability in any of these deaths and can't imagine how these books could lead to any problems.
Well,
that's the last of our stories.
I'm sad.
Just want to hear more about passages from this book.
You can find the whole book online.
Is it endorsed by anyone?
Jesus.
See, I feel like I should find copies of this book and put like a spring-loaded boxing glove in there, like for fucking Bugs Bunny. Just a note attached that says, how'd you like it?
So, personal stories. Not necessarily of child abuse, my friends. Just the episode is on child care and bad child care advice.
Yeah.
Oh, I got spanked all the time.
I don't really remember getting spanked ever. I'm sure it happened at some point.
Yeah, I definitely was spanked when I was younger. Not excessively, and there was definitely a line, and I would push things across it. I can't say that I didn't know what was coming.
I have a lot of stories, like my wife has told me about her mother raising her. Oh, no. For reference, her mother tried for years to have a child. Many miscarriages. Once she finally had a child, the first thing she did was booby trap the room she was in.
Just to be safe.
Because the nurses were obviously going to steal the child.
Yeah, Krampus was coming.
Wait, booby trapped the hospital room?
Yeah. She booby trapped up the hospital room. And her approach to a lot of child rearing was the child should not be punished at all and also scare her. So, to be like, oh, no, you can't play out in the front yard. Someone will take you. Like, even if you're watching, a man will stop by and take you. Or the fact that she'd let my wife run around for 3 days without sleeping.
What do you mean let her? Wouldn't she just sleep on her own after some amount of time?
Yeah, but I feel like you're supposed to set some sort of boundary to the sleep.
Sure, but I feel like after 3 days, sleep would just kind of find you at some point.
You can't escape forever.
It is kind of interesting. I always think it's funny when my mother and Sean's father are in the same room, because you get the contrasting views of like the way our generation was raised and the way their generation was raised.
Yeah.
And they'll go off on these, you know, well, we would ramble for hours and no one knew where we are, and I'd take my motorcycle up to Tahoe, etc., etc. Or you guys, you never did any of that. And we're like, well, you're our parents. You are the ones who did not allow that.
Yeah.
And that there's this odd disconnect where they don't seem to realize that they were the ones who set those boundaries.
I used to do plenty of rambling.
Yeah, as I say, I had it both ways, which is kind of weird because my mom and dad were divorced when I was very young. And I don't know why exactly, but my dad and the woman he was married to they had very clear boundaries and very clear rules. And those rules were expected to be followed. And if they weren't, there were, you know, consequences. They weren't bad or anything. Just, you know, that was the way things were. But at my mom, it was just pretty much like, you know, whatever. There was like certain things I had to do. But like there was one time when I was in middle school, I rode home from school every day on my bike, and I went to go home and my bike had a flat tire. So I went to a friend's house and I was going to call my dad and tell him that my bike was flat. But at that friend's house, my friend's dad was talking to his mom, who was out of town, and they hadn't talked in a few days. So they ended up being on the phone for like an hour. And as soon as they hung up, I called my dad, and my dad was like in tears, having a panic attack. And I guess the police were out looking for me because I wasn't at home. Yeah. It might have been 2 hours, but it was still not a tremendously long time. And then like a couple of years later, when I was in high school, I think, Andy, I stayed the night at your house. And then the next night I stayed the night at Adam's house. And then the next night I stayed the night at Andy's house again. And I didn't mentioned it to my mom. I just didn't think about it. And then I went home and she was like, oh, there you are. I was starting to wonder where you were. And I hadn't been home in like 4 days. And I was just like, that was just the two different parenting styles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whiplash.
Yeah.
All right, then. If we don't have any more personal stories, we're going to move on to what are your morals worth?
Oh, no.
This was hard for me to figure out something that we could discuss that wouldn't be terrible.
Yeah.
So my question is, how much would I have to pay you to go back in time and age and be a 13-year-old in the Spartan military school?
I'm already too skinny and weak.
I mean,
how long do I have to...
1 year.
It'd be one thing if I, like, just born and raised in that sort of environment.
Yeah.
It's entirely different, like, coming from this and going to that.
We can at least arrange for you to speak the language.
That's it? Because that's going to suck.
I've never noticed such a chubby blonde child here.
So, just to reiterate, you're going to be denied shoes. You'll be given one outfit for a year. And if you need more food than just not starving, you will have to either kill it yourself or steal it from someone else.
One outfit for a year? That's very gauche.
I mean, if I don't come out of this year just totally jacked.
I will let you keep your physique at the end of it.
Yes.
I should hope so. I worked really hard for it.
Say, oh good, I'll be a 100-pound adult.
Hey, you guys.
I mean, that'd be rough, but honestly, I feel like I'd be okay. I'm probably too optimistic, but I'm pretty good at sneaking around and stealing crap.
I don't know if your diabetes would do too good in Spartan times.
Well, that's you didn't the have thing. It at 13.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't diabetic when I was 13.
Yeah.
And I was in pretty good shape when I was 13. I think I'd be okay, but definitely I'd want to take a few years off after that. So 150,000.
That's too low.
I have to get back to my standard... to my current body shape after getting jacked.
No, yeah. that's not the point, Andy.
Hmm?
I mean, I'd have to take a couple years off to train for the training that's about to happen.
I wonder if it would help.
Probably not.
Yeah, I think like 150,000. That gives me a few years off after being trained to murder.
I don't know. I kind of like the idea. And like I said, it's going to really suck, but...
Yeah, you could write a book and make millions after you get back.
Be one of the most dangerous people alive after that.
write yourself a fitness book.
What would I title this fitness book?
Fed to the Wolves, My Spartan Adventure.
Nice. Yeah, I'll undercut you guys a little. I'll just go 100,000.
How to make one outfit work for you.
I'm going to the girls' school, and I'm still up in my price.
So you're just going to be a secretary for a year.
Actually, these girls' schools were very like the boys' school. You got shoes, but it was all...
Whoa, shoes!
Look at those girls with their shoes!
It was all physical training, and like they believed that, you know, you needed strong women to have strong Spartan babies.
Yeah.
And I hate physical exertion of any kind, so I'm going to go... A year of suffering through that, I'm going to go 300,000.
Okay.
When I was 13, I could do it, though.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
I was a very big 13-year-old.
Beat up the other kids. They are going to be Spartan, so they may be strong, but they'll be little.
That's true. Back when the average height was 2'5".
Sean's just stepping on children.
Stepping over them.
Give me your lunch money.
Leave me alone, Shonicus.
So, as we're winding down here, I wanted to reach out to people. And, you know, maybe your experiences are different for your what are your morals worth. So how much would we have to pay you to be a 13-year-old in Sparta for a year? Because maybe you'll get the job and undercut us. Or maybe we're crazy and you can tell us why. So you can reach us at Acid Pop Podcast on Twitter. Or you can email us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com, because we'd love to hear from you.
Don't you take my job.
All right, that's all I've got for you, so we'll see you next week, and thank you for tuning in.
Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.
Moving the pop filter.
Gotta have my pop filter.
Well, yeah, because otherwise your peas will get in there. Yeah, thanks, Speed Buggy.
I'm glad you knew what that was, Andy, because I couldn't call it to memory.